What a time to be born in, to live in such a peaceful land, to have so many things to enjoy. You know, it's very dangerous to the soul, because the soul becomes very fat. Well, the truly fat, the truly fed, are those who are fed with righteousness, those who are fed of the word, who become strong. Let your soul delight itself in fatness. Come unto me. I'm quoting from Isaiah chapter 55. Ho, everyone that thirsteth, come to the waters. And ye that have no money, come ye, buy and drink. Drink wine and oil without money, without price. Why do you labor for that which is not bread? And why do you work for that which is not drink? God has a meat and a drink to fill us with. Something more, something beyond the human experience. But you read that psalm. Doesn't it inspire some sort of thought of, hey, wow, that's really close. I mean, the words there really make you think of Jesus. In my heart, it's so close that I have difficulty going over it again because I feel like, well, I just said it. I mean, what, I gotta speak of the mockings? I gotta re-speak of how they spoke to him, let him deliver him? Dallas, I think there were probably a few there who probably recognized this fact, and they see this event going on, and they, God, they pierced my hands and my feet, and da-da-da-da, that's a messianic passage, perhaps. And then they start thinking, David wrote this, and now the son of David is fulfilling it. They laughed, they mocked. Here it is, the thieves also mock. In Luke, he writes of the malefactors that one did not, but one asked forgiveness. It's possible that either one changed his mind, or that there were others brought later, because it says these were crucified with Christ, and in Luke it says others were brought later. I just say that in passing, because people sometimes get confused about the differences between the Gospels. And a lot of times it's more than you realize. That's what I'm saying, it's our understanding that needs to come along. The scriptures are fine. All those words. Read Psalm 22. Read this chapter over and over again. See the victory of God, and also what happened. He was so real. And that piece of cloth that they call the Shroud of Turin, it testifies that the man lived. There used to be a lot of doubt about it. And there still is, of course, by those who do not really want to look at the evidence. Because the evidence, though, it doesn't prove the resurrection, or prove a miracle, or prove anything. Because really, as long as something is unexplained, it can't be proven. But it can't be disproven either. And at some point you have to say, I'm not a scientist, I'm a man. I'm not a slave to my five senses. I've got a heart. And my heart tells me something. My heart tells me something like I ought to believe. You know, I'm a person with a strong mind. You know, and it's been to me to think logically and think according to solid facts. But how do I even know that my five senses are all that there are to sense? I mean, what arrogance to think, well, I can see, touch, hear, smell, taste. What more could there be? What more could there be? All the animals have those senses and I have those senses. There's nothing more. What arrogance and foolishness. You can't even, how do you know? How do you know that there aren't things that exist that can't be detected? I'm not just talking about spiritual powers, you could call it that, but things that are, I mean, we don't have names for. We don't have names for it all, because we don't even know. You know, they dare talk about multiple universes. They can't even talk about the universe they're in. They don't even know what's out there. Dark matter and blah, 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 and the laws of the universe. What do they know? Laws? Who made them laws? Who's to say that tomorrow things just don't start floating off the desk? And no one is to say. Now, you can laugh tomorrow when they don't, but still, what is certain? Nothing. Except something. God. God is certain. He's certainly there. And what we think, and he put himself in a position where, to us, that is the most doubtful thing of all. Because God is shutting us out. Many of us. That's why it is well to use diligence. I want to be sure. I want to enter in this kingdom. I want to live forever. Verse 45. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land to the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Some of them that stood by there, when they heard this, that said, this man called for Elias. And straightway one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink. The rest said, "Let be. Let us see whether Elias will come to save him. Maybe we'll see something exciting." Now think about that. That's how dense they are. He's quoting that scripture. That's how far they are from understanding what they're seeing. That psalm had in it, "They pierced my hands and my feet." Now, a lot, the common thing people say is that God turned his back on Christ on the cross. He turned his back on him and he forsook him. It's so ridiculous because he's the son. God doesn't forsake his son. Are you kidding me? Oh, because he became sin and God can't look on sin. And so, but I have seen their deeds. You know, Jesus became sin only. It's a figure. You know, he became, this is all a spiritual thing. He doesn't like, I mean, what, God's too much of a prude? This guy turned his back on his own son because he became sin for us that know no sin? He became a curse for us? He is God. God can't turn his back on God. It's ridiculous. What it is Jesus is expressing, one, the fact that the psalm itself is being fulfilled, but two, his very real feelings of being forsaken. He not only is fulfilling that psalm, he's fulfilling it in the sense of he's feeling the same feelings that you would feel in any such situation of, "Where are you, God? I didn't want to do this, God, but I submitted myself to you. Why have you forsaken me? Where are you? You're so far from my call. You're so far from my roaring. You don't hear me. I don't think you're there. Don't you see the trouble I'm in?" He was touched in every way the same as we are, with feelings. And this doesn't exhibit a lack of faith either. He felt forsaken. It's a feeling. You know, it was quite an ordeal that he went through. Because Christ, though he was God, he was still fully a man. He wasn't some Superman. But they're not getting what he's doing or calling, or they don't understand the reference to the psalm, and they think, "Oh, what's that? What did he say? Elias?" And so one of them runs, and I'm wondering what motivated him. Some said, maybe he understood what, you know, "My heart is like water. All my bones are a joint. My heart is like wax. My tongue cleaves to my..." Maybe he recognized the events and said, "He's thirsty." Maybe he was thinking, "I'll be able to hear him clearer if I give him something to drink." And obviously they have no idea what's going on. And that's telling, because